Her name is safe with you, as mine is. And besides, you knew it without my telling you. Red sank to ashes in the west, and ash gray sank to black. All the sea and sky were wholly dark. Ged stretched out in the bottom of the boat to sleep, wrapped in his cloak of wool and fur. Vetch, holding the sail rope, sang softly from the deed of Enlad, where the song tells how the mage Morred the White left Havnor in his oarless longship, and coming to the island Solea saw Elfaron in the orchards in the spring. Ged slept before the song came to the sorry end of their love, Morred's death, the ruin of Enlad, the sea waves vast and bitter, whelming the orchards of Solea. Towards midnight he woke, and watched again while Vetch slept. The little boat ran sharp over choppy seas, fleeing the strong wind that leaned on her sail, running blind through the night, but the overcast had broken, and before dawn the thin moon shining between brown edge clouds shed a weak light on the sea. "The moon wanes to her dark," Vetch murmured, awake in the dawn when for a while the cold wind dropped. Ged looked up at the white half-ring above the paling eastern waters, but said nothing. The dark of the moon that follows first after sun return is called the fallows, and is the contrary pole of the days of the moon and the long dance in summer. It is an unlucky time for travelers and for the sick. Children are not given their true name during the fallows, and no deeds are sung, nor swords, nor edge-tools sharpened, nor oaths sworn. It is the dark axis of the year when things done are ill done. 3 days out from Sutter's they came, following seabirds and shore wrack, to Pelimer, a small isle humped high above the high gray seas. Its people spoke Hardic, but in their own fashion, strange even to Vetch's ears. The young men came ashore there for fresh water and a respite from the sea, and at first were well received, with wonder and commotion. There was a sorcerer in the main town of the island, but he was mad. He would talk only of the great serpent that was eating at the foundations of Pelimer, so that soon the island must go adrift like a boat cut from her moorings and slide out over the edge of the world. At first he greeted the young wizards courteously, but as he talked about the serpent he began to look askance at Ged, and then he fell to railing at them there in the street, calling them spies and servants of the sea snake. The Pelimarians looked dourly at them after that, since though mad, he was their sorcerer. So Ged and Vetch made no long stay, but set forth again before nightfall, going always south and east. In these days and nights of sailing, Ged never spoke of the shadow, nor directly of his quest, and the nearest Vetch came to asking any question was, as they followed the same course farther and farther out and away from the known lands of Earthsea, "Are you sure?" To this Ged answered only, "Is the iron sure where the magnet lies?" Vetch nodded, and they went on, no more being said by either. But from time to time they talked of the crafts and devices that mages of old days had used to find out the hidden name of baneful powers and beings. How Neregar of Paln had learned the black mage's name from overhearing the conversation of dragons, and how Morred had seen his enemy's name written by falling raindrops in the dust of the battlefield of the plains of Enlad. They spoke of finding spells and invocations and those answerable questions which only the master patterner of Roke can ask. But often Ged would end by murmuring words which Ogion had said to him on the shoulder of Gaunt Mountain in an autumn long ago. "To hear, one must be silent." And he would fall silent and ponder, hour by hour, always watching the sea ahead of the boat's way. Sometimes it seemed to Vetch that his friends saw, across the waves and miles and gray days yet to come, the thing they followed and the dark end of their voyage. They passed between Cornay and Gosk in foul weather, seeing neither isle in the fog and rain, and knowing they had passed them only on the next day when they saw ahead of them an isle of pinnacled cliffs, above which seagulls wheeled in huge flocks, whose mewing clamor could be heard from far over the sea. Vetch said, "That will be Astowel from the look of it, last land. East and south of it, the charts are empty.
Yet they who live there may know of farther lands."
"Why do you say so?"
Vetch asked, for Ged had spoken uneasily, and his answer to this again was halting and strange. "Not there," he said, gazing at Astowel ahead and past it or through it. "Not there. Not on the sea, not on the sea, but on dry land. What land? For the springs of the open sea, beyond the sources, behind the gates of daylight. Then he fell silent, and when he spoke again it was in an ordinary voice, as if he had been freed from a spell or a vision and had no clear memory of it. The port of Astowel, a creek mouth between rocky heights, was on the northern shore of the isle, and all the huts of the town faced north and west. It was as if the island turned its face, though from so far away, always towards Earthsea, towards mankind. Excitement and dismay attended the arrival of strangers in a season when no boat had ever braved the seas round Astowel. The women all stayed in the wattle huts, peering out the door, hiding their children behind their skirts, drawing back fearfully into the darkness of the huts as the strangers came up from the beach. The men, lean fellows, ill-clothed against the cold, gathered in a solemn circle about Vetch and Ged, and each one held a stone hand-axe or a knife of shell. But once their fear was past, they made the strangers very welcome, and there was no end to their questions. Seldom did any ship come to them, even from Soders or Rolamani, they having nothing to trade for bronze or fine wares. They had not even any wood. Their boats were coracles woven of reed, and it was a brave sailor who would go as far as Gosk or Cornay in such a craft. They dwelt all alone here at the edge of all the maps. They had no witch or sorcerer, and seemed not to recognize the young wizard's staffs for what they were, admiring them only for the precious stuff they were made of, wood. Their chief, or isle man, was very old, and he alone of his people had ever before seen a man born in the archipelago. Ged, therefore, was a marvel to them. The men brought their little sons to look at the archipelago, so they might remember him when they were old. They had never heard of Gaunt, only of Havnor and Ea, and took him for a lord of Havnor. He did his best to answer their questions about the white city he had never seen, but he was restless as the evening wore on, and at last he asked the men of the village, as they sat crowded round the fire pit, in the lodge house, in the reeking warmth of the goat dung and broom faggots that were all their fuel, what lies eastward of your land? They were silent, some grinning, others grim. The old isle man answered, "The sea? There is no land beyond?" "This is last land. There is no land beyond. There is nothing but water till the world's edge." "These are wise men, father."